Chapter 2. Few things in life gave B. Winstead more pleasure than a crowded room. As one of New York's most legendary art patrons, B. was famous for her intimate gatherings of, 100 or so people. The kind of people whose deep pockets and eagerness to acquire the next big thing merited an invite. And then there were the guests of honor, the lucky artists who walked into B's Park Avenue apartment wondering how they might pay the next month's rent on their studios in Greenpoint, and ending the evening with six figures in sales. It was this promise of art meeting commerce that had given B's parties the heady air of unpredictability and importance for more than four decades. But apparently, her power was waning. She scanned the room and noted the no-shows. Had her parties lost their luster? Or was it simply that she could not compete with Memorial Day weekend when everyone fled to the Hamptons? God, how she loathed the Hamptons. "Kyle, tell the caterers to keep the drink carts at least 5 feet from any panels." Her assistant was a handsome young man with a thick head of hair, vibrant blue eyes, and the chiseled features of a movie star. When she first saw him doing odd jobs around her building, she assumed that was what he aspired to be, an actor, like her favorite waiter at Oriole, who'd ended up on a sitcom.
"No, ma'am, I'm happy to be a handyman,"
he'd said when she asked. Bea appreciated that kind of focus. Dedication to work was important, whatever that work might be. It was a sign of good character. And so, when she needed help with a particularly complicated art installation in her apartment, she'd asked him. That same week, her assistant quit. She thought, why not hire someone practical for a change? Enough with these dreamy art hangers-on with no discernible skills. She offered the young handyman a job with a salary he couldn't turn down. B took a final look at the canvases Kyle had mounted on the wall for the evening's event, paintings of gigantic flowers, amoebas, and birds. The artist, Bronx native Frank Cuban, was 26 years old. B was hosting this show of his work tonight as a favor for an old friend, Joyce Carrier Jones, an artist she'd known back in the heyday of the 10th Street galleries. Now Joyce was the dean of admissions at Franklin, the city's top fine arts high school. Cuban was a former student. In art, as in life, it was all about who you knew. The artist's show included one panel in acrylic, graphite, wood, and nail polish. Another was an oil pastel on paper with Sharpie and spray paint. Amusing, yes. Groundbreaking, no. B missed the days when there were one or two big art movements in any given decade. She missed the sense of discovering a true star. But the key to longevity was not to look back. Looking back was fatal to the spirit. Joyce Carrier Jones walked over and handed B a glass of wine. Joyce had a loud manner of dressing, bright caftans and large ceramic jewelry. Her dyed black hair had a dramatic silver streak in front, and she wore oversized square-framed glasses. "Cheers," Joyce said, "to the rise of another new talent. You know, B, I really admire your career. I might want to move into managing artists like you used to do. Never too late, right?" B barely heard her. She held up her wine glass, incredulous. It was stemless. Did any standards exist these days? "This is unacceptable," she said. "Do you see a crack?" Joyce said. "It's not what I see, it's what I don't see. A stem. You cannot serve white wine in a stemless glass." Her free hand fluttered impatiently up to the large pearls around her neck.
"Oh, B, it's fine. You have to get with the time."